All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Focus on Ink podcast. Today I'm joined by my good buddy Nick Bowker of Nick Bowker Hunting in South Africa. Nick and I talk about what you can expect when hunting with him out in South Africa. We touch on Cease the Lion and how anti-hunters in South Africa compare to the ones here in Canada. Also want to give a quick shout out to BC's Interior Chapter of SCI. If you guys aren't members yet, make sure you go to www.bcinteriorsci.ca. Click on that membership tab, become members today. I also want to give a quick shout out to Eric N. Eric wrote me in and said how much he loved the show, and he asked if we're going to be covering any training information on the Focus Hunting podcast. You bet, Eric. We got some information on that coming out here real soon, so stay tuned. And be sure to check your email because I'm going to be sending you a $50 gift certificate. But I think for now, we're going to get right into this show, so enjoy, guys. Well, this sucks. Welcome to the Focus Hunting Podcast, Nick.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate you having me.
Nick, maybe before we get into our conversation here today, you can just give the listeners here in Canada and those in the US who are listening the rundown on who you are.
Well, I'm Nick Barker from Nick Barker Hunting, South Africa. I've lived my entire life in the Bedford area of the Eastern Cape of South Africa. I shot my first animal at the age of six. I've been hunting ever since, and I've been a professional hunter and outfitter for 25 years. Family originally came over from Britain in the 1820s, and then we settled on the farm Olifanten, where I am now in the 1880s, and this is the base for Nick Barker Hunting.
Mentioned you lived in the Bedford area of South Africa. Where exactly is that?
So Bedford is in the Eastern Cape, which is sort of eastern southern part of the country. Closest big city is Port Elizabeth, and the lodge is about 2 hours north of that. So anybody coming to hunt with me would you generally fly into Johannesburg, which is our major hub, and then you catch a connecting flight to Port Elizabeth.
Here in Canada, we're classified, I guess, as like a first world country. Can you maybe tell me what it was like growing up in South Africa?
I grew up in the 70s in South Africa. As I say, the freedom that we were afforded back in those days was just unbelievable. I started hunting when I was six. I shot my first springbuck when I was around six with a .22. By the age of eight, I was up with our hound pack every morning at 4:30, chasing jackal and caracal, which obviously are a menace to the sheep and the game. Obviously, I had to work on the ranch and stuff like that. In those days, the freedom we were afforded and the responsibility we were given at a young age, something that I don't think kids anywhere in the world get that anymore, and it's perhaps a shame, I don't know. But I really enjoyed it.
So, how did you get into the outfitting business? Was this a family business, or is this something you kind of started yourself?
It's actually something I started myself. As I said, my family's been there for five generations, and we basically focus on sheep farming. And so when I completed my military service and been to university, I came back to the ranch and I decided to put my hunting skills to work. So I qualified as a professional hunter, and then I hunted for another company for 2 years. And then once I'd built up some experience, a friend of mine and I started an outfitting business together. We did that for about 10 years, and then we split up after that. And then from there, I moved on to Nick Barker Hunting, and that's been going 15 years.
It looks like a pretty neat spot. Can you tell me a bit about your lodge? What can people expect when they come stay with you?
The lodge is slightly different from the typical sort of African lodge that comes to mind. So the lodge is the original farmhouse that was built in the 1880s with the stone walls and high ceilings, a lot of history in there, a lot of antiques. And then the client rooms, I've recently redone those. So they're honestly first class, ensuite bathrooms, very luxurious. And then we've got an entertainment area with a bar and a big stone fireplace that we light a fire every night. Sometimes we cook on the fire. Then we've got a stunning view looking down over the valley, and there's a swimming pool. So, you can really make yourself at home and feel comfortable.
So, what type of hunts do you offer out there?
First of all, I'm a small personalized operation. I only have one, generally only have one group of hunters in camp at a time, or maybe two sets of two. I have got a professional hunter, Benjamin Pringle, that assists me. I do the hunting. So from that perspective, it is fairly unique. And then I specialize in free range plains game hunting. So by free range, I mean no high fences. Animals are free to come and go as they please. We've got about a base of about 80,000 acres that I hunt on. That includes our ranch and all the neighbors. And then also, depending on what species you're looking for, also have access to other ranches around Bedford. It's a big hunting area. And yeah, you're not going to run into any other hunters while you're with me.
Yeah, so what type of species are we talking about in these hunts?
For the first timer, I do an 8-day, 7 trophy hunt, and that varies, but generally species like kudu, nyala, gemsbuck, lesbuck, springbuck, warthog, impala, the sort of package deal. And that kind of ties in nicely because you've got the animals like kudu and nyala are very much in thick terrain, requires a lot of time, a lot of glassing, a lot of patience, early morning, late evening hunting. And then the sort of springbuck, blessbuck, plains game animals you can hunt during the day. They're out in the open. A typical hunt's going to test various skills from a hunter. You're going to need some long shots. You're going to need some quick shots. So I think it offers a real neat introduction to hunting in Africa. Also offer cull hunts, which is quite unique. From the cull hunts, you're shooting in those different species, you're shooting males that are don't think will turn into trophies. So it helps in the management. So it's getting rid of some of the bad blood in the species. And they've become quite popular because on a typical hunt, you can either do 20 animal or 30 animals. That involves quite a lot of shooting and a lot of fun.
You mentioned long shots. I assume all the hunting methods are rifle, or is there any archery style hunts as well?
Purely rifle hunting due to the terrain. And as you rightly said, there's some longer range shooting involved.
So what's the process like to get a rifle into the country? Is there a lot of paperwork involved in getting a rifle into South Africa?
To get a rifle into South Africa, what I recommend is there's a company called riflepermit.com and various others. So they will handle the paperwork. You just email, get hold of them, and they will send you a package with all the paperwork that you've got to fill in. So they'll do all that for you, and they'll meet you at the airport. So that makes life a lot easier. You're allowed 2 rifles, must be of different calibers, and I think it's 200 rounds in total. Once you've got all your paperwork, you'll be checked in the US or the Canadian side, everything. And then when you arrive in South Africa again, you go to customs, and there you'll check your, the South African Police Service. And there you'll just hand in your paperwork and everything is in order. Then off you go with your rifle.
Oh, yeah. Well, that doesn't sound too hard, I guess. You mentioned you're allowed 2 calibers. What caliber would you recommend for this type of hunting?
I recommend for what we're doing and the size of the animals that you're shooting, 7 rem mag, 300 wood mag, in and around those calibers, a little bit fatter shooting and packing a little bit of punch, but something that you are comfortable with. For those people that don't want the hassle of bringing their rifles in, I do have rifles that I allow people to use free of charge, and I've got a 7 rem mag and a 300 wind mag.
Oh yeah, I guess that makes things a little easier if they can just use one of your rifles, eh?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more popular. But I mean, for the guys, the old guys that have their special rifle that they want to bring, it's not as difficult and as daunting as you think. As I said, I would definitely get hold of people that specialize in the paperwork, and they get everything done for you, and they meet you at the airport and take you through everything, and it's fairly straightforward. And I mean, a lot of rifles have come into South Africa over the last 10 years for sure.
In Canada here, we're going through a big shift in what the government classifies as legal firearms. Now, I'm assuming, firearm laws are different from country to country, and what here in Canada we consider illegal, you guys might consider legal. So are there any restrictions on types of firearms that can be brought into your country? I mean, can't bring in a fully automatic.
No fully automatic, no semi-autos, and no handguns, no sort of self-defense handguns. You can bring a handgun in for hunting, but it needs to be classified as a hunting revolver, basically. That does require a bit of extra paperwork. So the rifles you bring in, they want to be classified as hunting rifles. And then shotguns, obviously, will bird hunting.
So what about leaving the country? I know here in Canada, sometimes it's harder to get back into your own country than it is to leave. Have you had any incidences where clients have had a little difficulty getting back home or getting out of South Africa?
No, the only instance I've had of clients not being able to get home was when 9/11 happened, and they were caught in Joburg for a week before they could land. And apart from that, never had any issues. Once or twice, the guys' rifles have arrived late, but we've managed to get them delivered to the ranch in 24 hours, so it hasn't been a big major issue. So, and this down in Eastern Cape, it's very safe. I mean, the lodge, I don't even when I'm not there, I don't even lock it. So we've never had any security issues or anything like that.
Yeah, I guess 9/11 was a little bit of issue in terms of flying for pretty much anyone, but those American clients you had at the time, they must have been pretty scary for them not knowing what was going on back at home.
Yeah, no, that was just bad timing, and certainly after 9/11, the hunting industry took a big knock in certainly in South Africa.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously keeping the hide is a huge part of these hunts. So after the hunt, is the taxidermy done in South Africa and then shipped back stateside?
Okay, so you've got with your trophies, you've got two options. So we'll field prep them, skin them, and salt them, and then I'll take them to my local taxidermist. And then when they get to him, you've got two options. If you want the taxidermy work done back in Canada or the United States, they will then do a dip and pack, which is basically just a chemical treatment, and then ship the trophies out. They'll be done your side, or you can get the trophies mounted in South Africa and then shipped over.
Right.
And then your PH falls in a register, and this acts as your export permit.
Okay. So, with the United States' change in government from red back to blue again, I remember President Obama's administration implementing a ban that restricted all imports of trophies from certain regions of South Africa. I think there were six, I can't remember which ones in particular, but now they have Joe Biden, who's president, and he doesn't hide the fact that he's no fan of guns or hunting. Now there's been talks about Joe Biden banning all imports of trophies into the United States. Now I know here in Canada that would have a crushing blow to the outfitter industry. I'm assuming it would be devastating to the guides in South Africa too, but just how devastating would that be?
I mean, the banning of trophies, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't think people realize quite the impact that the banning of trophies are going to have. I mean, for most hunters that come out and hunt, they're going to want to take the trophy back, and I understand that. So, I mean, they're starting with things like lion and stuff like that, as you said, but I think that's just to get a foothold, and then they're going to push on for everything else. And, I mean, just the immediate impact with me. If I had to shut my trophy hunting business down, I would need to cull the number of animals. I would need to get rid of most of them, so I can increase my sheep numbers just to make a living. So, I mean, that's just the first impact. There's hundreds of animals gone. The others to be affected, I mean, it's the big impact on the hunting shops. I'm not going to be supporting them anymore. The local supermarkets rely on the hunting outfitters. We buy a lot of their produce and stuff like that to keep our lodge going. Your trackers, skinners, camp staff, caterers, they're all directly affected and going to lose their jobs and their families. I mean, the whole taxidermy business, which is big in South Africa, would be shut down. And all the meat that feeds the local population. I mean, all my camp staff and trackers and skinners, whenever we're hunting, they get as much meat as they can eat, and the rest is supplied to the local butcher. So, I mean, it's just a whole network of industries that are going to get shut down, and billions of rands.
So what percent of your clients are from the United States?
90, 95%.
Yeah, so that would be obviously be quite the blow to not just your business but to the entire outfitting business there. And
Yeah, I mean, I think it would bring it. It would basically bring it to its knees.
yeah, well, hopefully that doesn't happen. I know the anti-hunting organizations, they like to use the word trophy as bravado against hunters. You mentioned it starts with lions and elephants. Here we're sort of facing the same thing. We deal with anti-hunters targeting predators like bears and mountain lions and those type of hunts. I always go back to, it's the lowest hanging fruit on the tree. It always gets picked, and then after lions and elephants, what's it going to be next? It's the same issue that we deal with here. I know our outfitting industry is constantly under attack from anti-hunting organizations. There seems to have been a huge movement in the last, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years. I think it started when that Cecil the Lion incident happened, and I don't know the whole story there. And was it legal? I'm sure it was legal. Was it ethical? It probably, probably wasn't handled the best way, but I mean, it is what it is. And I always tell hunters in our area and hunters I talk to that, it's important to band together as hunters. And, because these anti-hunting groups, whether they're over there or they're here, they have one mission, and they're not going to stop at one thing.
Absolutely, and I think kind of what you're saying is that as hunters, we don't want to give them ammunition to fight against us. So, things like the Cecil the Lion story was unfortunate. I mean, I guess the only guy that knows the real story was the PH involved. As you said, it was legal. I don't know how far he was baiting from the national park, but that's probably not ethical. When they shot the lion and they discovered the collar, that was the time to come clean and say we've made a mistake, and then maybe things wouldn't have got so out of hand. And so that's why I think it's very important for us as hunters and guides to, do things by the book.
Yeah. Was that as much of a big deal down in South Africa? In the United States, I mean, it just blew up. I believe he was a dentist. He had to shut down his practice, and yeah, I think he moved from where he was living, and yeah, he just couldn't recover from that. But was it as big of a deal down there as they made it out to be in the US?
Perhaps not quite as big, but I mean the anti-hunters certainly made a big deal out of it here and really cashed in on it, and I feel really sorry for the client in that position, because I mean, as you say, I mean he had to close down his practice and he actually didn't do anything wrong. He was following orders from his guide. And I think that moving on to that point, that's the importance. You need to do your homework when you, especially when you're going a long way to hunt. You need to do your homework and make sure you're getting a reputable outfitter and PH.
You mentioned the anti-hunting organizations down there. Here in Canada and the US, the anti-hunting organizations, there seems to be a lot of them, and they're all very well organized. They seem to be well funded and meticulous when it comes to their position on hunting. What are they like down there in terms of public support and presence?
There is. I don't think they're quite as organized as your anti-hunting, and we're certainly not under as much pressure as you guys are. But I think they do feed off what happens in the States and in Canada. Yeah, it is becoming more and more of an issue. That's why podcasts like this are so important. Spread the hunting word around and get young people involved in hunting too. I've got two twin girls they're about to turn 13, but they've been hunting since they were 6 or 7. So yeah, I think that's very important, is to get the younger generation involved too.
Yeah, and I think that's just it. I know for myself, my brothers and I, we were taught the importance of animal harvest, not to waste anything, and that's something I ingrain on my children as well. I think that's part of the biggest misconception is the use of meat in these so-called trophy hunts, as they like to be portrayed. Nothing goes to waste. It's all utilized. It feeds, tons of people, villages. It's funny when you think of anti-hunting or anti-hunting animal rights conservationists. The term conservation, by definition, is the prevention of a wasteful use of a resource. That defines basically everything that hunters are. We don't waste anything. It's all utilized.
Well, and that's probably the irony of it, is that, the anti-hunting groups look at us as bloodthirsty and just wanting to kill animals, but our love of the outdoors and of maintaining animals and maintaining their habitat is far stronger than theirs ever will be.
Yeah, it's funny how tangled the word conservation has become. I don't see the anti-hunting community doing a lot for conservation. They like to push for non-pragmatic hunting closures, such as, the grizzly bear. And, I remember once listening to a representative from Born Free USA talk about Teddy Roosevelt killing, over 5,000 animals in Africa, and then cloaking all that by declaring or dedicating thousands of acres to national forest. This is obviously nothing more than fallacy to persuade the non-hunting community to perhaps take their side. They reference hunters as a dystopian, rugged provider, that has since been replaced by a trophy hunter who is nothing more than a shooter in a canned environment. And, they talk about these guided hunts as hunters or shooters having the ability to select animals off a menu. And it doesn't really matter what type of hunt we're talking about. To them, it's they classify everything as a trophy hunt. And, I think of the word trophy hunting as, my house is decorated with lots of skulls and hides from animals I've killed over the years. And, when I look at all the skulls and hides and to me, I see a story. Everyone is unique. It's a remembrance of an experience shared with, my father, my son, my brother, or, myself and nature.
Well, and I mean, I agree with you 100%. And the problem is, I think they're using the word trophy. They're turning the word trophy around. I mean, from my understanding, it originally came around. I mean, a trophy animal. We're not going out to look for something to put on your wall. We're going out to look for an animal that's bred and he's past his prime and he's old and he's generally on his own. That is, to me, what a trophy is. Not necessarily the biggest animal. I think the anti-hunters misuse the term trophy to their advantage, obviously. And I mean, the everything from that so-called trophy animal is used. I mean, the meat, the hide, everything is utilized. So, and I mean, you can explain that to them till you're blue in the face. You summed it up there. Every time you look at a set of antlers, it takes you back to the experience you had, the time that you spent outdoors. You were cold, you were wet, or you were hot, and the effort it took to get to that animal and enjoying the outdoors.
Yeah. But I mean, you and I can talk all day about this, but back to your hunts. How many hunts do you offer per year, say pre-COVID?
I like to do about 15 hunts a year. So that probably translates to around 35 hunters. Together, some are twos and threes and fours, and some are ones. So yeah, I like to do about 15 hunts and with 35 hunters a year.
I mean, obviously COVID's had some impact on you guys out there, but how affected have you been from COVID?
To put it into perspective, I did two hunts last year, one in March, and I got another one in December, and I was one of the lucky outfitters. Some people had none. So I mean, it's basically brought the whole industry to a complete standstill for a year. How things are going to pan out this year, we don't know yet. We're hopeful. I've got, I think, nine hunts booked with about 24 hunters, but I mean, that all depends whether they can get flights and all that sort of stuff. So we're still positive. But yeah, I don't think a lot of people in the industry, I don't think they can survive another year of no hunting. A lot of staff and people involved in a hunting business, and they've all got to be paid. So hopefully we can get it up and running as soon as possible.
I know here in Canada, a lot of locals stepped up and they helped out the guide industry. I mean, that was part of the response from the guide outfitters was they were giving substantial deals to Canadian residents for hunts just because, the borders to the US were closed. And again, same situation with you. I think here it's like 98% of the clients for the guides are from the US. So yeah, when they shut the international borders down, it rocked the guiding industry hard. So do you guys offer hunts to locals? Like, is that something you guys do down there as well, or is that just not an option? Or just something maybe that locals aren't interested in?
No, there's a big local hunting industry. So 90% of that is for meat hunting for their own use. But yes, the same kind of thing happened. Yeah, Outfitters ran a lot of specials and got a lot of local hunters into to hunt, which I mean did help. But I mean, still a massive shortfall.
I'm not familiar with how things work in terms of guide outfitter operations out there. Here we have a guide outfitter association that represents and lobbies for outfitters. They're currently working on a recovery plan for the outfitters in BC. Do you guys have something similar to that? Is there an organization or group that that represents all you outfitters as a whole, and or maybe is there a recovery strategy plan for post-COVID?
We have the Professional Hunters Association of South Africa. We have another thing called Wildlife Ranchers of South Africa. So, I mean, they're trying to help, but there's no, as far as I can understand, there's no structure in place to try and turn things around. I think everybody's just kind of on their own trying to get things going again. I mean, I think as soon as we can get on top of this COVID, I think hunting will go strong again in South Africa.
I'm optimistic and hopeful that everything, in a year from now, everybody will bounce back and the floodgates open for all you guys, and everything goes back to normal for all of us.
No, absolutely. As I said, I think and the hunter community, as you say, I mean, worldwide, we're always band together. And I know the guys, I've got guys that want to come this year, and if they can get flights here, they said they're going to come. So, that's just at least a positive step in the right direction.
I know my dad and I have talked about doing a hunt like that. I mean, that's going to be on our radar here in the next few years. Hopefully he maintains his health and we can get out there to see you for a hunt. That'd be nice.
No, that would be fantastic. Yeah, always awesome to go hunting with your dad or your kids. That's kind of, just makes it.
Yeah, what's the is there an age limit for youth with you guys?
No, as long as he's under under the supervision of a professional hunter, then there's no age limit.
On your website, you've got a checklist for first time African hunts, which I think is a great idea. It's kind of a all you need to know reference guide. You have some information there on hunting laws in South Africa. Is there any specific hunting laws that you think maybe people should be aware of when planning a trip like this?
Well, I mean, it's fairly straightforward. Any foreign hunter can come to South Africa, but in order to hunt, he needs to be with a licensed professional hunter. And I go back to exporting your trophies. You're going to need a licensed professional hunter to get your trophies out, because you need to fill in that register for you. So, I mean, that goes back to doing your homework, making sure that the guy you deal with is licensed and legitimate. Apart from that, there are no laws that are going to affect overseas hunters coming in. There are different laws for local hunters, different times of the year and stuff like that. But overseas hunters can come at any time. As I said, as long as they're in the care of a licensed professional hunter. Never had any bad incidences. I think the worst thing that's happened to me was it was a good 10, 15 years ago. I was hunting with a fairly elderly gentleman. We were looking for kudu, but he brought a handgun with, and he wanted to try and shoot something with a handgun. I said, "That's fine. We'll just carry it, and if we get the opportunity to get in close to something, you can use it." And we were hunting in another area, and I saw a nice warthog boar grazing next to sort of an old, broken down, dilapidated barn. So I said to him, "Come on, Arnie, this is a good chance for us to use your handgun. We should be able to get in close. Yeah, we can use the old barn as cover." And anyway, so we snuck our way around, and I stuck my head around, and the warthog had actually grazed right forward. So it was literally 6, 7 yards from me. Whispered to him, "It's right in front. Yeah, I can't come around with you because you're going to see me. So you must just step around and make the shot." Anyway, Arnie Judy stepped around and he made the shot, and it sounded hit. And I saw the warthog breaking that way. So I sort of raked one in from behind it to try and slow it down. And we set off following it. And after we'd gone about 20, 30 yards, our tracker, Alvin, is walking behind me and he said, "Sir, we've got a problem." So I said, "What now?" Anyway, he pointed to the left and Arnie had inadvertently shot a sheep.
Oh no.
So he hadn't seen the water, which was 5 or 6 yards from him, and he'd seen the sheep sort of 30 yards away, and in his excitement, he'd shot the sheep. So we had a dead sheep and a wounded warthog. Anyway, we subsequently retrieved the warthog and we had to go back because we were hunting on somebody else's property. We had to go back to the landowner and I had to explain to him why I'd shot a sheep. Anyway, he saw the humor in it and we settled up everything and it was all's well that ends well.
Oh, well, that's good. So you mentioned clients can come anytime year round. So you offer your hunts on a year round basis?
Pretty much. I would say the best months are March through October. After October, sort of January, February, everything's got, they've kidded and they've got small, they've got young stuff. So you don't really want to chase animals around then. So the majority of the season is March through April, March through October, beg your pardon. Like this year, last year when things were so abnormal, I had to hunt in December and it went all fine.
What about gear for a trip like this? What kind of gear do we need for a hunt?
Well, the biggest mistake everybody makes is bringing too many clothes. You just need two sets of hunting gear because your laundry gets done every day, and then some nice comfortable stuff to wear in the evenings around the fire. Maybe a jacket or two, good walking shoes. The most important thing is a good set of binoculars because we will do an awful lot of glassing, and it'll just, if you've got a good set of binos, you're going to be participating in the glassing and seeing what's going on and helping and maybe even finding your own animal. So that to me is the most important thing. Obviously, if you bring your own rifles, you need to be comfortable with them and have shot them a lot. If you're going to use my rifles, we'll spend, a goodly part on the first morning on the range just so you're getting comfortable with them. And I mean, that's basically it. You don't have to bring a lot of stuff.
So do you have a range out at your place there?
I do have a range where certainly we will, if you bring your rifle, we'll sight it in when we're there to make sure it's on. And if you're using my rifle, then you'll shoot it a good couple of times to get comfortable with it.
I mean, traveling anywhere, a lot can happen to your rifle and it's always good to check. But imagine flying in a plane, there's a pretty good chance that your sights might be off a little bit. So you have to re-zero it.
And what I also do on the range is most of our shots are taken off shooting sticks. So I'll have you take a good couple of shots off shooting sticks to make sure you're comfortable. And there's a gong. I've got a gong out at 100 yards and you have to hit the gong off the shooting sticks before we can set forth.
I'm assuming you guys use the shooting sticks for pretty much the majority of your hunts.
So I'll always carry the shooting sticks with me and then set them up for you. So yeah, I mean, I would guess 80-90% of your shots are going to be taken off shooting sticks just because of the terrain and where you're walking in that. I mean, sometimes you get lucky and then we can go prone over a backpack or bar pods or whatever. So that does help. And especially if you're taking a longer shot, then we're going to get a good strong base. But majority of the time, yeah, off shooting sticks.
What kind of distances would be considered a long shot?
Well, I mean, personally, I consider anything from 300 yards up is a long shot. So 300-400 yards. If people are comfortable and they can do longer shots, that's up to them. The terrain does afford you that, but I mean, that's something you need to be comfortable with and have practiced a lot.
Imagine the topography, it's pretty flat out there, I'm assuming. What's the longest shot that you've seen out there?
I've seen a shot of over 1,000 yards.
Wow, that's a long shot.
Yeah, that's with the right equipment, tactical scope, good range finders, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and experience.
Experience exactly, but that's really not the norm. I mean, the normal most of our on a typical 8-day hunt, most of our shots are going to be between 150 and 350.
Oh yeah, that's manageable for sure. I think my longest shot ever was 402, and that was last year, and I thought that was a long way.
Well, that is any time you're going past 250, it's getting out there. To be fair. A quick shot or shooting sticks at 150 is just as difficult or more difficult than you lying prone, testing the wind and all that sort of stuff at, say, 500-600. So, all different variables in play.
What's the most dangerous animal you offer in your hunt packages? I know, when you watch the African hunts on TV, they always talk about the dangerous, like Cape Buffalo. Or what's the most dangerous in your packaged hunt?
Certainly, we offer buffalo hunts. That is certainly the most dangerous. They can be mean. A buffalo hunt, it's just a real adrenaline rush. because what we call Dugger Boys, the old bulls that live on their own, they're always shot in thick stuff. So, I mean, it's 50 yards and closer. Sometimes it can be 20 yards, 15 yards. So if something goes wrong there, you can get yourself into big trouble. You don't have much time to recover.
No, 20 yards offer a lot of reaction time, especially with something that big. Have you
It
guys
certainly
ever
does
had
it.
any instances where somebody got hurt?
I've never had anybody that's got hurt. The closest we've come, we stopped a bull at 7 yards. Yeah,
When you
fortunately, no
say
beast.
stopped, what he was charging in, and you guys put him down?
Exactly. Yeah, we shot him at about probably about 47 yards in thick stuff, and sort of hit him, and he went down, and he got up, and got into some really thick stuff that we couldn't see what was going on. And then when he came out, he probably came out at the next time we saw him, he was probably 15 yards away.
But the client must have been, I wonder what he thought
Well,
about that.
as I said, all's well that ends well. It certainly provided some high adrenaline stuff.
There's nothing that gets your adrenaline going like an animal barreling down on you. We have grizzly bears here, so I've had a few run-ins with some mean and nasty bears that were a little too close for my liking.
That's a big animal, that too, with a lot of capability to do damage.
So what kind of money would one of these package hunt deals run somebody?
I've got a package hunt that you can do for $4,000 US. So that includes 8 days accommodation, seven trophy animals, all your board and lodging, everything included. So from the moment I pick you up at Port Elizabeth Airport, only thing it excludes is your taxidermy work and your flights.
Well, that seems pretty affordable, I think. I looked into it before, and I think from Vancouver to Johannesburg, it would have cost me roughly $1,000 Canadian. So, I mean, that's definitely doable.
I mean, that's a good deal.
You know, especially right now too, the airlines are hurting. So, I think you're going to find a lot of good deals. Airlines trying to entice people to get back up in the air flying again. So, I mean, something like this is definitely going to be affordable, and probably now the time to do it.
I think so, and I think a lot of people in the US and Canada don't re actually realize how affordable a hunt in Africa is.
And this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. So, yeah, that's.
No, absolutely, and I just think the uniqueness of the Eastern Cape, and specifically around the Bedford area, is just the different number of species and different terrain that we've got now. Quickly it changes. It'll honestly blow your mind.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think, like I said, my dad and I, we've been talking about it a lot lately, and I think you can expect us down there as soon as we know for certain what's going on with these with the COVID restrictions and everything. I think you can expect us down there for sure.
Oh, I'd love to have you out hunting. Love to.
Yeah, my day's just starting, but yours is coming to an end here. Is there anything else you'd like people in Canada here to know?
I mean, all I'd love to say is that just take the leap of faith. It's a lot simpler and a lot easier and a lot cheaper than everybody thinks. And it's safe. And I mean, as you say, it's a once in a lifetime memory that you're going to have. It really is worth doing. Anybody wants to get hold of me, the easiest way is to go to my website, Nick Bowker Hunting. And I've also got a closed Facebook account where, anti-hunters can't see what's going on and abuse you, putting up deals and showing you what's been shot and stuff like that. So if you want to join that, go to my website and email. We put you in there, and then you can see what's going on, and you can speak to other guys that have hunted with me.
Okay, buddy. I'm gonna let you go here, but it's always a pleasure talking to you, and we'll talk again soon. And
Absolute pleasure, Kevin. Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, hopefully we'll see you in the not too distant future. And yeah, happy hunting, and hopefully we can be back to full steam next year.
you believe that? Wow. I guess it's all worth it.